So with the practice of a staffer law,
anything that anyone would like to share, either here or abroad. So here we can remind ourselves, remember this practice, when we know we've committed some error, when we have regret, when we know that we could have done it better, we can take up the practice, feeling divine forgiveness, even imagining the situation that we have regret about, and offering this vibration to that. I mean, it really is very interesting. And we know that science is proving to us that things are not really linear. They move out in space far enough that it looks back at itself. Einstein told us this. We're finding that the new physicists are understanding this, that when two lines move in an opposite direction, they bend and connect at some point in space. In the same way, we're on a line or a path in our life, and at some point we're looking and we can see the reflection of that, and eventually it will boomerang back, it will return to us again. It's very interesting. The Buddhists might call it karma, but the physicists describe it in this way. Jesus said, sow what you reap, or reap what you sow, excuse me. Reap what you sow. It's the same thing. It's just a different way of describing this. So by offering this vibration, it can come back and perhaps heal that situation through the grace of God. Intention and motivation is everything. Intention and motivation is everything. And when we're speaking of impulse, where is the impulse arising from? It's a very interesting question. And are we often mindful of that? And then it gets even more subtle and more tricky, because we may think we're doing some good, but maybe we're not doing some good. Maybe we're doing some bad. It's not so... It takes the wisdom mind to see into the situation to know. And maybe to stop the impulse, look at the situation, look what is behind the situation, and perhaps even the blessing behind the situation. I was reading something the other day. It's a quote of Hazrat Inayat Khan. And it says, he said, man implements God's plan. I mean, we're the agent of the divine. But we have to ask ourselves, where's God's plan in all of this? Sometimes the questionable things, too. Is there something?
Well, does the ego get in the way of that, perhaps?
Perhaps.
It might not. Perhaps the ego is the engine driving towards the fulfillment of God's plan. And when disciplined.
Right. And we remember Murshid Hidayat mentioning that. That it is it is in a way kind of the engine. It can give us the dynamics to do things. So we're not trying to eradicate the ego or shame the ego, but make the ego a very good agent in one's life and a servant. It's not like, oh, bad ego, we have to get rid of it, you know. But it's how do we train that ego? There'll be some things later in this teaching that will help us understand it further. We're wrestling with it. I hope that we're wrestling with it, and I hope that the teachings are taking seed and that we're having to reflect within ourselves based on what's said here and then throughout the month. Some have told me that it is that way for them, and I know it certainly is for me as well. Moving on with the teaching of Anayat Khan, refraining from free impulse. The wise, by learning the lesson of humility, of gentleness, and of mildness, make their spirit, as it is called in the Bible, poor. Blessed are the poor in spirit. These manners are sometimes taught, but if one does not feel them within oneself, they become forms and conventions without spirit or life or effect in them. These manners are sometimes taught, but if one does not feel them within oneself, they become forms and conventions without spirit or life or effect in them. And we know that this is true. We've had this in the previous body of teachings about self-consciousness, about how false humility is even more serious than the idea of just out-and-out pride, because that too is a form of pride. But there's a covering over it. There's a pretense. So we have an additional teaching that can help illustrate this point a bit. And it's a story of a slave. But before I read that, I'd like to just read a little bit of a prelude. And this is from Sufi Message Volume 11, titled Psychology, the section on suggestions through impressions and belief. And then this is titled, I Cannot. This is by Hazrat Anayat Khan. It happens very often that we find a man who has been successful in life goes on being successful, and that a person who has once failed goes on failing. Looked at from a psychological point of view, the reason is that the first man was impressed by his success, and so he continues to be successful. And the other, who was impressed by his failure, continued to have failures because that impression suggested failure to him. There was a wealthy man who had lost all his money and who had become poor, yet he would not admit it. He said, "No, I have not lost it. I have still got it in my mind somewhere." And in 6 months' time, he became as rich as he was before. He did not allow his failure to suggest itself to him. And so it is with one's character. Often a person says, "I'm stupid. I cannot think." And when he has said this several times, naturally, he becomes stupid. The power of the word, the power of thought. Sometimes he says it out of modesty, humility, or politeness. But this virtue will prove to be a sin. Also, many have lost their memory through suggestion. When they have forgotten something, which is a natural thing for a human being to do, they repeat to themselves, "How stupid! How forgetful on my part!" And that idea, repeated twice or thrice, deepens that forgetfulness. There are many different drawbacks of this kind. As when a person says, "When I am among people, I become nervous. I become timid. When I'm asked to speak or do something, I cannot do it." All these things are suggestions. Napoleon never liked to say, "I cannot." When a man says, "I cannot," he has made a suggestion to himself, and he has weakened his power of accomplishing what he could otherwise have accomplished. To admit to oneself, "I have no force, I have no power, I have no thought, I have no intelligence," only means working against oneself. Often people who are disappointed with the world say, "My heart has grown cold." But in actuality, they who suggest to themselves that their heart has become cold. Others may say, "I can no longer love." But we have come from love. We are love itself. We are made of love. How then can we no longer love? All these suggestions, which are undesirable and foolish, work against our life. Then there are people who imagine that nobody likes them, that everybody hates them, that everybody is jealous of them. Nobody may hate them. Nobody may have disliked them. But naturally, when such a thought develops in their own minds, it reflects upon others and creates in them the tendency to hate and dislike them. That's really interesting. One needs to be very mindful of one's thoughts. I remember when my mother and I were visiting with her doctor, and some of you are aware of her situation. My mother has a very positive attitude, and she always believes that even with the worst of news, that she can overcome anything, and she has. And she said to the doctor when he gave her some news, "I'm not worried. I will pray, and I know it will be okay." And he said, "Well, I don't believe that there's a man up in the sky in some white gown with a white hair and a white beard granting wishes. But what I do know from a scientific point of view is what we think, form will follow. And therefore, your optimism will help heal you." Very important to think about. And this is a man of science. So if we have some tendency, or we feel our life is moving in another direction, don't repeat that to yourself. If it's going in a downward slope, you say, I am going upward. I will succeed. I will have prosperity. I will have good health. I will it. I will. And willing, along with prayer, brings a kind of grace. And you know, there are bad things that happen, but this feeling of hope and belief is so essential for us to move on, to keep an open heart, to have faith that things will change, that there's some wisdom in these circumstances. And I know I've said it, I've repeated myself, but there's some good examples that bear repeating. They say that the people that survived in the concentration camps were the people that had hope. And the people that gave up hope were the ones that died. And you've all probably seen that wonderful movie. You know what it's called? It was in Italian, I think. And it was about the man that was in the concentration. Beautiful life or a beautiful day or something where the man
beautiful.
Yes, it's something and it was something beautiful. Thank you, Cabrera. But the man was in a concentration camp with his child, and he had the ability to understand what the Germans were saying, but the others could not understand the language because they were Italian. And so he would interpret everything as, especially to the little boy, his little son who was with him, well, they're saying we're going to play this great game and we're going to go out there and we're going to do this. And it was like totally, you know, they're being talked to in the most wretched of ways by the German soldiers. But he's totally making it into this great game and great fun, and we're going to have a good day and we're going to get our exercise. And, you know, so everything he translated in a totally different way, and therefore, in a way, made it appear so. It was very interesting. It's a great movie. I'm sure everyone has seen it. But if you recall it, it's a good lesson. It's a really good lesson. We should always remember that man is not created by God as wood carved by the carpenter. For the carpenter is different from the wood. But that man is created out of the self of God, and therefore, all that is in God is in man. All that is in God is in man. So Merchant goes on to say that the psychological idea should not, of course, keep one from cultivating these qualities. So, for example, he says, to keep us from cultivating the principle of modesty. If a man without learning says, I'm learned, it does not mean that he will become learned. I mean, there needs to be some effort there. Yes? I'm learned. Give me a degree. I deserve it. I've actually known people that thought that, but it's not true. Things are gained and accomplished with effort. And I do see a question here. Yes, there's this comment from Alima in Holland that it softens my heart. It softens my harsh thinking of myself that these teachings can really help. And I hope Astafirlah, perhaps it's referring even back to that. So back to this teaching again. If a man says, I'm learned, does not mean that he will become learned. If without having a voice he claims to be a tenor, this will not make him a tenor. If he has not got those qualities, he should not profess them, though he may anticipate them and expect them. He should not say that he is not entitled to them. He should say, I'm entitled to all that opens the door to progress. But as soon as man admits to himself that he has not got that quality, that intelligence, that power, that gift in him, he himself drives spirit out of that world. Can everyone bear a little more reading? Because this story is a beautiful illustration of this. This is the story, and it's a continuation of this same teaching, the story of Ayaz. The following story is an example of modesty together with suggestion. A slave named Ayaz was so highly favored by the Sultan that the Sultan made him his treasurer. The most precious jewels and gems were given to his charge. And those around the Sultan felt angry about this, to think that a slave was raised to their rank and that he was given such a trust. They were always trying to point out faults in the slave to the Sultan. One day, a person of the court said, Ayaz goes every day to the treasure house. even when there's no need to. And he sometimes remains there for hours. He certainly steals precious jewels from the treasury. Every day the Sultan was hearing something against Ayaz. And at last he said, "If this is really so, I will go and see it with my own eyes." He went and made a hole in the wall so that he could see and hear what the slave did there. The Sultan was standing outside, looking into the room, and Ayaz entered and closed the door. First, he opened the chest in which the precious jewels of the Sultan were kept. Then out of that same chest, he took something which he had kept there. He kissed it and pressed it to his eyes. And then he opened the package. And what was it? It was the same garment which he had worn when he was sold as a slave. He took off his court clothes and put on that garment, and he stood before the mirror and said, "Ayaz, do you remember today what you were before? Nothing. A slave brought before the king to be sold. The king appreciated something in you. Perhaps you do not deserve it, but try your best to be faithful to the king who has made you what you are, and never forget the day when you wore this garment, that you may not raise your head in pride above the others who work under you, and never allow your feeling of gratitude to leave you. For prosperity is always intoxicating. Keep yourself sober and thank God, and pray God to grant the Sultan a long life, and be grateful for all that has been given to you." Then he took off the garment and put it back in the chest and closed the door and came out. The Sultan approached him with open arms and said, "Ayaz, until now you were the treasurer of my jewels, but now you are the treasurer of my heart. You have taught me a lesson of how I must stand before my king, before whom I am nothing, and I was nothing. This must be the attitude. It is not a suggestion of his misery as a slave. It is a suggestion of the realization that he had come from that state to his exalted position, and also that he should prove worthy of it." Just a little bit more. Can I go on?
Please.
It's really good, isn't it? I mean, it's pithy, and it says a lot about this teaching that we're studying today. The next section is on hope, effort, and belief. Hope, effort, and belief. When we become conscious of our unworthiness, of our limitations, it certainly helps us, yet it can only really help us when we hope to become better. If we stop there, then we might just as well stay there forever. When a person says that he is too weak to become any better, he stays where he is. But when he admits to himself, yes, today I am weak, but tomorrow I will be better. I will try to be better. That is the right attitude. We should never allow the spirit, that spirit of mastery, which is in us, to become blunted by the feeling of inability. We should never allow that spirit of mastery, which is in us, to become blunted by a feeling of inability. For the essence of life is hope. And when we hope for the better, we shall be better. It cannot be otherwise. Hopelessness is worse than death. It is better to die than to lose hope. Just a little bit more. We are able to do anything we choose to make the effort. The difficulty is that often we do not choose to make the effort. And why not? Because we do not believe. What is generally lacking in man is belief. He does not believe. And the sad thing is, this is belief in oneself. So just a little bit more to clarify this thought. How can one get belief? Murshid asks. He says, this is the most difficult question anyone can ask, for it cannot be learned. It cannot be taught. It is a grace of God. Belief is essentially the same thing as faith. But only when belief has become a conviction does it turn into faith. This is Anayat Khan speaking. I remember my Murshid giving me, in blessing me, this wish. May your faith be strengthened. May your faith be strengthened. Being a young man, I thought, is that all he's going to say to me? Not, may you be inspired or illuminated or prosperous or something else. But when I think of it now, I know that in that blessing, there was all. When belief is strengthened, then there is everything. All that we lack in life is mostly because of our lack of belief. But again, it is not something that one can learn or teach or that one can give to anybody. It comes from the grace of God. To affirm a belief is one thing, and to really believe it is another. Many will say that they believe, but few really believe. Yes, there are moments when a person is under the spell of belief, but then there come other moments when he's under a spell of unbelief. If this condition vanishes and there is a steady flow of belief, then as a river reaches the sea, that soul reaches perfection. I don't know, Karima Gita, if you can paraphrase that wonderful little story that you were asked to read one of the message readings at summer school. And there's that beautiful story of the preacher and the farmer. Am I correct? Do you want to tell that story? because you read it, and I know you really, and then in our deepening session, you brought that up.
Well, the story is that a farmer was at church, and the preacher was speaking about faith. And one of the things that the preacher had said in his sermon was that the one who has faith can walk on waters. And so the farmer invited the preacher to come to dinner because he was so impressed by what he had said regarding faith in his sermon. And he told them that he would meet him and pick him up to bring him to his home for dinner. Well, to get to his home, the farmer's home, one has to cross a river. So the farmer was waiting on the side of the river for the preacher to take him to his home for dinner. And the preacher came, and there stood the farmer, and he asked him, "Well, where is your boat?" And the farmer said, "Well, you taught me that if I had enough faith, I could walk on the waters. So I walked on the water." And so then the story continues that the preacher could not walk on the water. So that he, you know, then the simple farmer had enough faith to walk on the water. But the one who had knowledge of faith also still had difficulty and could not walk on the water. So,
and it led to a beautiful discussion between this subtlety between a simple belief or a construct that we kind of inherit and can recite and true deep abiding faith. We had a wonderful and lively kind of discussion talking about that. So it illustrates this point, you know, that, and it is maybe grace, but it was such a strong conviction that he had that that was the truth, that it made it so. That farmer, that simple man, to perform that miracle, really, in a sense. Thank you for sharing that, Karima Gita.